You boys have a drink on me, then I'll open this dance.
No, I will.
Smoke's .44 leapt into his hand, leveled at Sully's belt buckle before the wannabe gunhawk's hand could even reach his.
You're too easy, Sonny.
The humiliation of having been tossed back like an undersized fish pushed Sully to unwise desperation. He foolishly tried to draw.
God damn you! I'll kill y'all!
Smoke didn't even bother with Sully. Jeff York had iron in motion and sent a bullet to the heart. Three of the gang of outlaws turned bounty hunters had their own six guns in play. Smoke shot one of them in the upper right chest and put another down with a .44 slug in the thigh. When that one went down, three of the remaining shooters pounded boots on the floor in an effort to widen the space between them all. Walt reared and tracked one and took him off his boots with a bullet in the side. Jeff accounted for another, but the third had disappeared. Sudden motion behind Smoke Jensen's back ripped a warning from Mort Plummer, who had ducked behind the thick front of his bar and had seen the reflection in the mirror.
Look out, Smoke!
Smoke Jensen?
Oh, shit.
Oh,
my God. I won't backshoot you. I give up. Don't shoot me, Mr. Jensen, please. Ranger, I give up.
Lenny raised his arm skyward, the Smith American dangling from one finger by the trigger guard.
Why, you yellow belly!
Jip plugged Lenny, then swung his six gun on Smoke Jensen.
Kiss your ass!
Smoke Jensen drove Jip's last word down his throat with a .44 slug. Suddenly, glass exploded outward in a shower from one of the paint-decorated front windows as two of the remaining hard cases dived through it to escape certain death.
Oh, for Christ's sake!
Pete found himself alone facing the guns of Smoke Jensen, Jeff York, and Walt Reardon. Pete's mama had always considered him a bright little boy, and he proved her right this time. His Colt thudded in the sawdust that covered the plank floor. He raised trembling hands above his head.
All right, I call it quits. I mean, after all, Sully said we's only funning with y'all.
Jeff, do you want him, or shall I?
My pleasure.
Jeff York reholstered his .45 Colt. He took a pair of thin pigskin leather gloves from his hip pocket and slid them on his hands, his eyes never off of Pete for a second. Slowly, he advanced on the frightened two-bit gun hawk.
8-3. Is that the way you boys usually play it? Now it's just one-on-one. You got a choice. You can pick up that gun on the floor and try me, or you can use your fists.
I ain't got no quarrel with you, Ranger. Ain't no fight in me.
No backbone either. Do something, even if it's wrong. I'm getting tired of waiting.
Pete's eyes widened suddenly, then swiftly narrowed. He lunged at Jeff with a knife that seemed to spring from behind his back. Jeff dodged and popped Pete solidly in the mouth. Lips smashed and split. Pete's face sprayed blood in a rosy halo, but he lunged again. Jeff sidestepped the blade and grabbed the wrist and upper arm of the knife hand. He brought it down as he quickly raised a knee. The elbow broke. Pete went down in a fetal position in the spitting beer-stained sawdust.
Oh, shut the hell up!
Jeff silenced Pete with a solid kick to the head.
Noisy bastard, wasn't he?
The supplies are loaded.
Then I suppose we're through in town.
You weren't never here, Mr. Jensen. Wouldn't do to confuse our good sheriff as to who shot up my place.
Thanks. Take whatever you can find in their jeans to cover your loss.
Right. And I never seen you in my born days. Any of you. Good luck.
We'll need that. We used up a bit here today.
Miguel Sierrez did not like going to Arizona to take charge of the turnover of the White Mountain land. He liked it even less when the lacquered carriage he rode in jolted to an unexpected halt.
What is wrong out there? Why have we stopped in the middle of nowhere?
I think it's Quint Stalker and some of his boys.
What are you talking about, driver? They're supposed to be in Arizona.
Well, we're here.
Sierrez poked a head out of the curtained window. Four men without horses, all wounded, all dirty and powder grimed, stood at the side of the road. Astonishment painted Sierrez's face. He had never seen the proud Gamecock stalker so bedraggled.
Oh, how did this happen? Why are you not in Arizona?
We were headed there. Those damned Apaches waited around and hit us a second time. Killed all but us four. We're all wearing fresh wounds.
You have had a hard time. There is water at the reservation not far ahead. Climb on top and we'll ride there. After you've cleaned up, you can ride inside with me.
Well, thanks so damn much, Senior Sierras. Only we ain't going to go back out there. No way, no how.
Oh, I disagree, Senor Stalker.
Miguel Sierras reached under his coat and drew out a Mendoza copy of the .45 Colt Peacemaker. He leveled the weapon on the tip of Quint Stalker's nose.
You will go back to the Apache Reservation with me, or I will shoot you down for the cowardly dog you are.
Nervously, Quint cut his eyes to his three remaining men. Slowly, he shrugged and outstretched both hands, palms up.
Well, who can argue with such logic?
Martha Tucker looked at the mound of supplies being carted into the kitchen and the bunkhouse with eyes that shined. The ranch had run dangerously low of nearly everything in the 3 weeks since her husband's murder. She clapped her hands in delight and made much of the small tin cylinders of cinnamon, ground cloves, allspice, and black pepper.
Now I can bake pies again. What kind would you like, Mr. Jensen?
Oh, anything would be fine. I'm pleased you approved of my shopping. It's not often I do domestic chores.
And I'll bet your Sally doesn't have to send along a list.
No, Mrs. Tucker. But then Sally usually comes along with me. Watching her is how I learned to pick the best.
They ambled off as they talked. Horizontal purple bars filled the western quarter of the sky now, layered with pink, orange, and pale blue. At this altitude, stars already twinkled faintly in the east. Martha Tucker led the way to a circular bench built around the bole of a huge old cottonwood. There, she turned to face Smoke Jensen.
I feel like Mr. Jensen and Ms. Tucker are rather stiff after so much time. May I call you Smoke?
And if you wish, Martha. You know, it's funny, but I've been thinking of you by your given name for several days now.
They sat, and each resisted the urge to take the other by the hand.
I don't wish to seem prying, but could you tell me about your life before now?
Smoke sat silent for a while, then laced his fingers around his right knee and crossed it over the left.
I ran away. That's not quite true. My home ran away from me when I was 12. I wandered some and wound up out on the plains. I was about to get my hair lifted by some Pawnee when this woolly-looking critter out of hell rose up from the tall grass and shot two braves off their horses with a double-shot Hawking rifle. Dumped two more with another the same, then banged away with a pair of pistols. That's how I met Preacher.
Smoke went on to relate some of the milder adventures he had encountered as a youth in the keeping of Preacher. Martha listened with rapt attention. When words ran dry for Smoke, she told him of her life back east before she married Lawrence Tucker.
We had a fine place right outside Charleston, South Carolina. The war ruined all that, though. I was not yet 18 when I met Lawrence. He had come down with the occupation forces of Reconstruction. Like a proper young Southern lady, I hated old Yankees. Yet Lawrence seemed somehow different.
I'm surprised you ever got together.
I had little choice. Lawrence and his staff occupied our plantation house. Daddy had lost a leg at Chancellorsville and had left the service. Lawrence insisted from the first day his carpetbaggers moved into the main house that rent be paid. Only it was him paying that rent. He was young and a lawyer. He'd only served the last year of the war with the Bluebellies.
A profound change had come over Martha Tucker, Smoke noted with not a little discomfort. He saw it as though she were two different persons, the light-hearted one hidden under the burdens of the other. To make matters worse, he received a strong impression that she was flirting with him.
I've enjoyed this talk of old times, Martha. No offense, but right now my stomach thinks my throat's been cut.
Oh, my! What a ninny. I'll see to supper right away. Oh, the children will be starved, too. And thank you for confiding in me about your past life.
Martha Tucker headed back toward the kitchen. The chuckle came from the far side of the tree trunk. Jeff York stepped into view.
That one's falling in love.
You can go straight to hell, Jeff York.
Awakening at the palest of dawn light, Miguel Sierrez drew a deep breath, redolent with sage and yucca blooms. He immediately understood why Benton Howe coveted this land so much. It was very much like the valleys of the Sierra Madre Occidental where he had grown up.
What was that? My God! Indians!
Some 27 Apache warriors painted for war were firing arrows into the camp erected by the seven men who had accompanied Miguel Sierrez and Quint Stalker survivors. Then, a ragged fusillade of rifle fire erupted. The Apaches swarmed down. Miguel Sierrez unlimbered his Mendoza 45 and shot the nearest Apache through the breastbone. He then came to his boots and made directly for his carriage. Miguel Sierrez reached his goal with Quint right behind him. They both leapt inside. The carriage, unlike most of its contemporaries, was fashioned by the skilled Wainwrights of Durango. It did not have sides and a roof of thick oak planking. Sandwiched between layers of veneer, strong sheets of steel, fashioned from the boiler plates of a wrecked locomotive, made it nearly impregnable. Even the curtained windows had bulletproof shutters. Durango's coachmakers had provided firing ports, too. Not so much for fighting off Apaches, but for driving away bandits. Miguel and Quint fired out of them now. The Durango Company knew the requirements of the rich and powerful in their own country. The armored vehicle withstood assaults from arrow, lance, ball, and stone war club. Many who attacked it died for their efforts. A growing volume of firepower drove off the Apaches after a closely fought 5 minutes.
Did you think to bring some water and grub?
Of course. Under the seat, there's also extra ammunition.
Oh, you think of everything, Senor Sierras.
Oh, not everything, or I would not be in here with those cursed devils outside.
Yeah, I like a man with a sense of humor in tough situations.
You flatter me. Help yourself to my humble repast.
Stalker dug into the wicker hamper inside the hinged rear seat. He pulled out a cloth bag of shredded dry beef, Mexican style, another of parched corn, a tin can of bean paste, and another of peaches.
We're gonna feast like kings.
See, but the men won't fare so well unless they gather up what the Indians failed to destroy. I suggest you order them to bring everything they can and form defenses around my carriage. We could use 2 more guns in here. The rest can form barricades from rocks, saddles, and,
dead horses?
Ooh, see, dead horses.
By mid-morning, the situation had changed a little, except that it had grown blood-boilingly hot inside the coach. Great wet patches showed under the arms of the occupants and along their spines. Several of the hard-bitten outlaws outside the coach had managed to round up enough horses to harness the carriage and provide transportation for the survivors if some rode double. Miguel Sierras noted that spirits had risen considerably. Then, fate struck cruelly again.
It sounds like the Indians are on horseback this time!
Quint looked out of his rifle port and turned pale. A dozen Arizona Rangers, led by Tall Pockets Granger, had joined the Apaches, storming the mesa top of the desperate hard cases who were trapped there. Desperation added its own brand of discipline to the forlorn outlaw band. When the Apaches crashed into the improvised barricade, the white vermin reversed their rifles and used them for clubs. Winchesters bashed Apache heads, broke ribs, and slowed the advance. Low-held six guns blazed a clear path through the throng. The unlikely allies retreated. Miguel Sierra shouted through a riskily opened window.
Two out there! Get this team going! Surround the coach and ride for it! That's our only chance!
That was damned Arizona Rangers out there fighting alongside the Apaches. What they taking the Redskins side for?
Perhaps our bought politicians have not been able to accomplish all they promised. Or they aren't honest.
What the hell's an honest politician?
One who, when he's been bought, stays bought by the same people.
Hang on in there. We're making a run for it. Oh, hell, give it to him again.
Stalker slammed the shutters tight, and he and Sierra's manned the portals.
We're through them. I'm on the trail off the mesa.
Whew, we made it.
Gracias a Dios. I do believe we have.
Tall Pockets Granger watched a heavy carriage lumber down the steeply inclined trail. Most of his tough Arizona-wise lawmen cautiously eyed the charged-up Apaches who had also broken off pursuit. An explosive situation could erupt at any second. Using the Tendé language now, which he had learned as a child, Granger made a stunning announcement to Cuchillo Negro and his warriors.
Black Knife! I want you and your braves to raise your right hands.
What are you saying?
Come on, let's make this easy. Raise your right hands. Yeah, good. Okay, thank you. Now, do you swear to uphold the laws of the territory of Arizona, obey the orders of the new law chief over you, and keep the peace as directed? Answer yes.
White Clay, what are you doing?
Cuchillo Negro called Tall Pockets by the name he had earned as a boy when his father was agent to the White Mountain people.
Well, I'm making you my deputies, blood brother.
Black Knife's reaction began as a grin. Then it grew into a broad smile. And it ended...
Yes! Yes!
Black Knife turned to his people.
Say yes, my warriors!
Yes!
White Clay, I never believed I'd live to see this day.
Tall Pockets, who at 6'5" truly fit the name, pulled a perplexed expression.
Well, General Crook organized two companies of Apache scouts for the Army, so why can't the Rangers take you on?
For what purpose?
To track down those white lice and squash them.
Tall Pockets dismounted and approached Black Knife.
I heard what was done to the Tendé children.
Tension evaporated as the Tendé went among the Rangers, clasping forearms in the Apache fashion. Tall Pockets stood beside his blood brother and accepted the fealty of the warriors, all the while glancing at the fading stream of dust that marked the course of the outlaws.
All right, let's mount up and go after that slime!
What?!
Sir Jeffrey Benton Howe had just received two pieces of extremely bad news at the same time. The rider from town brought him word of the shootout in the Hangdog, as well as a telegram sent in haste from Springerville, Arizona Territory.
Yep, it was Smoke Jensen right enough. Enough folks recognized him while the shooting was going on and when he rode out of town. He was with a buckboard from the Tucker Ranch.
I just can't believe this! We worked so hard to convince that foolish woman that Smoke Jensen had killed her husband. How could she do this?
He didn't kill Tucker?
Of course not, you lout. One of Quint Stalker's men, Forrest Gore, did the job and bungled it mightily, I might add. Wait here while I read this. Then I will have some instructions for you.
Benton Howe slit the yellow envelope and pulled the message form. His face went crimson with each word that leaped from the page. It seems that Miguel Sierra's had been defeated and put to rout by a band of Apaches and the Arizona Rangers. Benton Howe's mind refused to accept it.
The Arizona Rangers? Impossible! This makes it even more important to end this matter with the Tucker woman at once. Rocky, I want you to round up 5 or 6 men and ride over to keep a watch on the Tucker Ranch. Better take enough to send messages back, for that matter. What you'll be looking for is the next time Smoke Jensen leaves there. You are to send word to me and then go in and apprehend the widow and her children. We're going to make them disappear from the face of the earth and then take that ranch.
Smoke Jensen turned away from the window that overlooked the dooryard of the Tucker Ranch.
I'm not satisfied with the results of the visits to Benton Howell's ranch. We need to take the fight to what's left of Stalker's men around Sicaro. The four of us can get them mightily stirred up.
How you figure to work it?
We'll split up. Cover more area that way. You and Walt, Ty Hardy and I.
Must you do this?
I'm afraid so. I don't figure this Englishman for being stupid. His partner's smart enough from what I've heard. They'll figure out sooner or later that the only place we can be is here. I want to keep the fighting away from you and your youngsters.
I'm grateful for that, Smoke, but the risk...
I've taken risks before and come out all right.
Smoke did not mention the scars that crisscrossed his body, or the eyes swollen shut and blackened by hard knuckles, nor the loose teeth and the split lips.
We'll head out in half an hour.
I'm coming too.
Jimmy!
That's not possible, Jimmy. Although they're hardly the best of a sorry lot, it's no place for you to be. You're good enough with a gun to protect your mother and the other kids, so your place is to stay here and do just that.
Aww, I never get to do anything.
Smoke Jensen had a hard time repressing a grin. An hour later, on a ridge overlooking the Tucker Ranch, Forrest Gore slid the brass telescope closed and slipped it in the case hung from his saddle horn.
Looks good, boys. They're long gone, nothing stirring around bunkhouse or corrals. Spread out so we can hit them from all sides at once. Today's wash day, so the woman will be out in the yard. If we cut her off from the house, we won't have any troubles at all. Grab her first, then the three kids. Then we head for the B-Bar H. Benton Howe says he wants to entertain the family for a while. Yeah!
Jeff York pointed ahead to what Smoke Jensen had already seen.
Someone sure fogging the road this way.
Must have come from a long way off. I've been watching the dust rise for a good 20 minutes.
Carbone said you had the eyes of a hawk. Now I believe him. Who do you think it could be?
Smoke studied the growing column of red-brown dust and the thin line far behind.
Not someone we're going to enjoy meeting.
Quint Stalker and his gang?
It could be, Jeff. Right funny if we set out hunting them and they found us first.
I'd maybe see the fun in it if we still had Walt and Ty along.
Smoke looked around the barren desert terrain.
There's nowhere to hide out here.
There'd be plenty if you were an Apache.
Think like an Indian. That's a damn good idea, Jeff. Let's get busy.
A quick course into the ground located a shallow gully. Smoke and Jeff rode into it and dismounted. At Smoke's direction, they stripped the saddlebags from their mounts and put the animals down on their sides. With stones from the bottom of the wash, they reinforced the lip of the draw in two places and then set out rifles and ammunition.
Nothing left to do but wait.
Not for long either.
They had a good view down the reverse slope of the elongated ridge where they had found the gully. Only thing, the road curved out of sight against the swell of the land, a scant 300 yards away. Outriders came into view first. Smoke caught sight of the heads of their horses, then the forward bent outlines of three men riding abreast. Behind them came a six-up team hauling a lumbering coach. The men to the rear of the carriage had their weapons out and ready and kept glancing behind them.
Whoever it is, looks like they're in some sort of trouble.
Reckon we let them get in close enough to see if we recognize any of them.
Not too close, I hope. I count nine men plus whoever's in that coach.
By then, the lead riders had come well within field glass range. Smoke studied the faces, and his full lips thinned into a grim line. He put the binoculars aside and levered around into the chamber of his Winchester.
One of them is Quint Stalker.
Well, we know which side we're on.
Quint Stalker had obtained a horse at the first homestead they had come upon after escaping from the White Mountains. He used the simple expedient of stealing it. He had so far ridden two mounts into the ground, and the team hauling that armor-plated carriage had been replaced three times. The cause of their unseemly haste hovered tauntingly on the western horizon. Contrary to the assurances of Miguel Sierrez, the Apaches had continued in pursuit, and by all appearances, the Arizona Rangers were riding with them. Quint suddenly swerved his mount to the left to avoid a large rock in the trail. That movement put the bullet meant for his heart in the eye of his horse and killed the animal instantly. When the dead beast's fore knees hit the hard, red-brown soil, Quint Stalker catapulted out of the saddle. Quint hit hard, the air driven from his lungs, and rolled along in the sharp-edged gravel that lay in his path. His chin took a lot of punishment and wound up bleeding profusely when he sprawled to a halt. From behind, the coach came bearing down on him. He'd be squashed into a red pulp by 24 hooves, to say nothing of those wheels.
No!
Quint lurched upward and threw himself to one side. He could see the hooves of the horses up close, and he could feel the heat of their bodies as they thundered past. The swaying carriage halted directly beside him.
Get in here, you idiot! Drive! What happened out there?
I don't know. Someone shot my horse out from under me.
Sierra squinted out the firing portal of one window.
Who? How many? I don't see anyone. It can't be the Indians.
That's what I thought. You're right. It can't be.
They're shooting at us!
It must be Smoke Jensen.
No more! We have enough men to finish him for all time!
Miguel came to his feet and leaned over Quint. A hinged panel in the back of the coach opened. He indicated with wild gesticulations that the riders behind the carriage should spread out and find the shooters. Then he watched as the gunmen did spread out and jumped their horses toward the lip of the ravine. Withering fire challenged them, yet they pushed on. One hard case clutched at his arm, where a bloodstain began to appear. Another doubled over, lips to the neck of his mouth, as though kissing it. The remainder drew off, seeking cover behind the carriage. Miguel Sierras peered out the firing portal again, then practically hung out of the open panel in the back.
You bastards! Ride ahead and kill those men! I see only two guns against you! Adelante, pronto!
With obvious reluctance, the outlaws charged again. This time, they fired steadily at the noted gun position ahead. Their heavy volume of fire forced Smoke and Jeff to pull down below the lip of the bank. Sierras watched with growing satisfaction. The riders reached the edge of the gully. Then a gunhawk from Albuquerque threw up his hands and fell backward off his horse. Smoke Jensen had switched to his .44. Jeff York opened up as well. Bullets gouged the carriage and cracked through the air. Another gunhawk grimaced as one of Smoke's slugs pierced his left leg, front to rear, right below the knee. Suddenly, they had had enough.
God damn it! Get over there and finish it, you sons of bitches!
Give us some covering fire, damn you!
Yeah, good idea. Spread out. Hit them from two sides. We'll keep their heads down.
It worked even better than Miguel Sierras expected. He and Quint Stalker opened fire first. Then the riders charged out from behind the carriage and streaked for the arroyo ahead and behind the positions of the ambushers. Victory lay only fractions of a second away. Suddenly, around the bend in the road that masked the back trail, some 20 Apache warriors swarmed with a dozen Arizona Rangers. Rapidly closing ground, they opened fire immediately.
Get us out of here!
Apaches accompanying the Rangers streamed on by the coach, intent on taking on the child killers beyond. Terror blanched the faces of the outlaws as Cuchillo Negro and his warriors raced down toward them. As the Apaches swarmed over them, the carriage suddenly lurched forward and away. While the Rangers did what they could to drag the vengeful warriors off the outlaws, Tall Pockets Granger pounded boots to the edge of the draw.
Thought it might be you, Captain York and Mr. Jensen. Good to see you again. Them horses you brought us worked real good.
Smoke came up onto the level.
Glad you like them. What brings you over this way?
Well, we decided to wipe out that stalker gang once and for all. Besides, I sort of figured Jeff here might need some help.
And the Apaches?
Well, they're my deputies. We're after the same enemy, Captain.
Then they're as welcome as can be. Only thing that bothers me is that coach got away. I thought we'd shot it to hell.
Wouldn't have done any good. That belongs to Miguel Sierras. It's all made of boilerplate under thin wood.
Granger filled Smoke and Jeff in on the battle in the White Mountains.
That ties everything together. I think the time has come to move directly on Benton Howell and his partner.
Well, I'd like to volunteer the services of the Arizona Rangers. That'll give you an effective force of 15.
More than that.
Blackknife joined them.
As deputies, we want to volunteer as well.
Good place to start is Sicaro. We can clean out the trash that Benton Howell has been gathering, then close in on the ranch. But let's ride by the Tucker Ranch first to enlist any others who might want to join the fight.
When they reached the Tucker Ranch 2 hours later, a wounded hand, Sean Quaid, gave them the bad news.
They killed Hub and Carter and took Ms. Tucker and the kids.
Who was it?
Don't know all of them. Some of the trash that's been showing up in town. Forrest Gore led them. I saw them clear.
Which way do they go?
Southwest, towards Socorro.
Then that's where we're going. We'll send a doctor out to take care of that leg, Sean.
Oh, thanks. Good luck. And keep your heads down.
From beyond rifle range, Smoke Jensen studied the crowded streets of Socorro through field glasses. The town was literally bursting at the seams with gunfighters and wannabes. When he had worked out in his mind how it should be done, he turned to Cacheo Negro.
I want to save you as a nasty surprise for the gunhawks in there.
These white men will have no heart for the fight when we attack.
That's what I'm thinking. They won't think much of the rest of us riding in. We can take a few by surprise, but the best of them will ford up somewhere. When that happens, and we get bogged down, you hit them from the far side of town.
Cacheo Negro cut his eyes to tall pockets.
This one thinks like a tinday.
Thank you. Learned most of my fighting skills from a man named Preacher.
My father knew the man and spoke of him often. We Tinde called him Grey Wolf. No other man could move so silently or fight so ferociously. I do not say that lightly.
He'd be proud to know your folks thought so highly of him.
Many Chiricahua, Mescaleros, and Tinde died before we learned to respect him.
He had plenty of company.
The Apaches left soon for their position. They seemed to dissolve into the empty terrain. One moment they were in plain view, the next, only faint puffs of dust showed where their horses had walked.
We'll give them half an hour, then ride in.
Two second-rate hard cases sat their horses at a point where wood rail fences and a cattle guard kept livestock from wandering the streets of Socorro. One of them tipped up the brim of his hat and peered into the wavery heat shimmer of midday.
More guns coming in. You'd think we was going after an army.
Hell, Mike. For $20 a day, I'd take on old General Sherman himself.
No denying the money's good. What?
Suddenly, Mike's spine stiffened him upright, and his hand went to his gun.
Damn. That one in the front is Smoke Jensen.
Ah, you're seeing things.
Mike whipped his six-gun clear of leather.
Well, so much for the element of surprise.
It's okay, my badge was gonna give us away anyway.
Three more hard cases stepped into the street. Jeff raised his Winchester. A wild shot caught Jeff in his left shoulder. Jeff brought the rifle to his right shoulder then and took careful aim. Smoke shattered a kerosene lamp beside a door through which a gunman dodged. The Rangers spread out, weapons at the ready. Smoke and Jeff continued toward the bar room. Jeff York stuffed a neckerchief under his shirt front to sop up the blood from the deep gouge cut to the meat of his shoulder point. Jeff and Smoke dismounted and stepped up onto the boardwalk. They entered through the bat wings together. They found themselves facing 9 outlaw guns. As the smoke cleared, Jeff turned to his companion.
9 less.
Let's take it back outside.
The swarm of hard cases and 2-bit gunslingers who thronged the streets of town stood silently, wondering what in the hell had just happened in the Blue Lantern. They did not like what they found out when the bat wings swung outward.
This town is out of bounds for your kind from this moment on.
The guns came out then, but Smoke and Jeff were quicker. One of the hard cases shot the hat off Smoke Jensen's head. He bought an early grave for his efforts.
Smoke, on the balcony!
Smoke pivoted to his left and sent another wannabe gunfighter off to hell. Hot lead cracked through the air around Smoke then. He moved swiftly across the street, charging the shooter instead of fleeing.
Jeff! Sounds like Tall Pockets and the boys could use some help.
Then let's go!
Some 20 gunfighters and assorted saddle trash had banded together and taken over a bank building. Its thick field stone walls made it into a fortress. The structure stood alone, an island at an intersection, which allowed the Rangers to completely surround it. When Smoke Jensen and Jeff York arrived, the occupants hotly exchanged shots with those outside.
I reckon they have the Tuckers in there.
Won't they be in danger?
Most likely they'll be somewhere safe. Probably in a cellar, if there is one. Dead hostages don't make good bargaining chips.
On the roof, the head and shoulders of a hard case appeared. He wore all black and had a full-flowing walrus mustache in matching color. He put a Ranger down with a bullet in the side. While he ducked down behind the stone verge and cycled the action of his rifle, Smoke Jensen's hand dropped smoothly to the .44 at his side. Above, beyond the low stone parapet, the gunman's hat took sudden flight, along with a gout of blood and brains. Jeff York stared at his friend in open amazement. Smoke pointed.
There's an arrow crack right there. I just waited until his black hat blotted out the light.
Jeff grinned and looked toward the north end of town.
Any time now.
Them damn Rangers ain't even supposed to be over here. They ain't got no jurisdiction. They ain't the law in New Mexico.
You see that slowing down the lead they're punching at us?
Oh, shut up.
What the hell is that?
Sounds like engines.
Oh, yeah? What engines would that be?
God, it sounds like Apaches. I've heard enough of them to last a lifetime.
What the hell are they doing here?
The hard case edged to a window on the north side of the bank lobby and peered out.
No. Oh, hell no. I can't believe this. They joined the damn Rangers. They're coming after us.
Suddenly, three Apaches dived through shattered sashes with stone-headed war club held high. A lance hurtled through a window and lodged itself in the hard case's throat. With the Apaches rampaging inside, the Arizona Rangers charged the building. Once the lawmen got in close and mixed it up with the gunhawks, all resistance ended quickly.
Round them up and secure them in manacles!
A search of the cellar came up with no sign of the Tucker family, but Payne Finney was found, hiding in a coal bunker, and he was brought to Smoke.
The Tuckers, where are they?
They aren't here. Never have been. I don't know where Stalker told Gore to take them.
Smoke grabbed Finney by one shoulder, and his thumb bore into the entry wound from a .44-40 round.
You wouldn't figure to try to run a lie past me now, would you?
No, I'm serious. I don't know where they took him. I've been here all the time. I never heard anything about the Tuckers.
Case of the right hand not letting the left know, you think?
Could be.
Where do we go from here?
Back to the ranch. The trackers I sent out should have something by now.
Half a dozen hard cases had ridden out of Sicaro as the Rangers thundered into town. From a safe distance, they had watched the roundup develop, heard the gunfire raise to a crescendo, and then watched in horror as hordes of Apaches swarmed into town. Then they lit out for the B-Bar H. They arrived on lathered, winded horses that trembled. Charlie Bascom, the nominal leader of the contingent that had escaped, reported to Quint Stalker and Jeffrey Benton Howe. What he had to tell them did not get a warm reception.
It's the truth, Sir Jeffrey. I tell you, the Apaches sided with those Arizona lawmen. I tell you, my guess is they'll be headed this way before long.
Damn it. That's the same lawmen that came after us. But they ain't got authority in New Mexico.
I'm afraid they do. It's called hot pursuit. They can keep coming until you are caught.
But you ain't gonna let them do that, are you?
Of course not. You've served me well and faithfully, with a few recent exceptions. I think it expedient to bid my friends from Washington and Santa Fe a fond adieu. We can hold off any force here until the governor learns of my plight. I'm sure he can get the interloping Arizona lawmen out of his territory. Meanwhile, I want you to organize the men we have here. Fortify the headquarters, and prepare to stand off a siege.
We got supplies for that?
Oh, my, yes. Ample food and ammunition, even some dynamite. Water might be a problem if this becomes protracted.
How long we talking?
4 or 5 days. All of the wells are out in the open. A marksman's delight, don't you know?
What about the Tucker woman? Can't we use her and the brats to bargain with?
That was my intention, if the situation required it. More to the point, I want her signature on a bill of sale. That must come first. I'm going to pay her a little visit right now. See to the preparations.
Martha Tucker looked up from her dark contemplations when Jeffrey Benton Howe entered the small, bare pantry in which she had been confined. She had been separated from her children the moment they arrived at the ranch. That troubled her a good deal more than the constant insistence that she sign the ranch over to the Englishman. Jimmy would be all right, she felt certain, but little Rose and Tommy could be easily frightened. When her eyes fixed on her visitor's face, she noted at once that something seemed to have ruffled his usual icy composure.
Mrs. Tucker, I'm afraid I really must insist on you signing the quitclaim deed form I provided. Time is running short.
For you and for me?
For both of us, I regret to say.
What is it, Mr. Benton Howe? Is Smoke Jensen closing in on you?
Smoke Jensen has nothing to do with the business between us. What I want is your ranch.
Smoke Jensen has everything to do with it. You tried to frame Mr. Jensen for the murder of my husband.
Damn it, madam, I'll not have that sort of talk from you. I had nothing whatever to do with that sorry incident.
Benton Howell omitted mentioning Miguel Sayeres and Quint Stalker, however.
The matter is plain and clear. I want that ranch.
How much are you offering for it?
Your life. And the lives of your children?
You were offering large sums of money before.
Which you chose to spurn. My patience is growing short. Perhaps I should have one of the youngsters brought here. I assure you, my men have ways that are most persuasive when dealing with a child.
You'd not dare harm one of them.
Ah, but I would, indeed. If my wishes are not acceded to. The form is on the counter there, and pen and ink. I recommend you sign now.
Why do you want our ranch so badly?
That is none of your affair. Sign that paper, madam.
No.
Benton Howe thought a moment.
That younger boy of yours, Tommy, is it? Yes. Is he a good scholar?
He does very well in school.
He probably wouldn't do as well missing his fingers, would he?
Martha leaped to her feet, her fingernails flashing like talons of an eagle. She raked him down the face of her tormentor. Benton Howe pushed her roughly away.
Common bitch! Sign it, or suffer the consequences.
By late afternoon, half a dozen hard-faced men had ridden in and tied horses at the Sicaro livery.
Jeff, I'm beginning to think there's an inexhaustible supply of second-rate gun hawks in New Mexico.
They had decided to delay their departure from town. One of the hands who had volunteered to help was sent back to the Tucker spread to make contact with the trackers and bring their discoveries to Smoke. Now, with 20 gunmen locked in jail, more than half of them wounded, the town was beginning to fill up with more of the same.
Tell me about it. By this time tomorrow, it'll be every bit as bad as it was when we rode in.
Too bad we couldn't keep the Apaches in town.
The good people of Socorro would have died of heart failure left and right. Some of my own men were concerned about how Black Knife's bucks would behave when they got the killing hunger on them.
They're damn good fighters.
They are that.
Sheriff Jake Reno came through the hangdog doorway and walked directly to Jeff York.
I see you're still in town, Ranger. Well, maybe that's a good thing. There's more of that border trash drifting in every hour.
Maybe it's that big reward you put out on my friend here.
Sheriff Reno turned to see whom the Arizona lawman meant. He came face to face with Smoke. His jaw sagged and the color drained from his cheeks. He staggered back a few small steps.
God damn it! Is it Smoke Jensen?
In person, Sheriff.
How's Trix?
Sheriff Reno reached for his Smith American and handcuffs at the same time.
You staying right there, Jensen. You're under arrest. Give up, or by God, I'm gonna gun you down right here.
Smoke Jensen backhanded Jake Reno so swiftly the sheriff never even saw it coming.
You're not arresting anyone, Sheriff.
You son of a...
Jake Reno balled huge ham fist and swung at Smoke, who easily slipped the first blow, but caught the second on the point of one shoulder. Smoke brought his hands up and worked on the sheriff's soft middle. To his surprise, Smoke found a hard slab of muscle beneath Reno's large gut. Reno punched Smoke in the face. Smoke's head snapped back and heat flared in his eyes. He drove a hard left to the side of Reno's jaw. Jake Reno backpedaled rapidly until he struck the bar. Then Smoke was all over him. First he cracked Reno's ribs, then he did the same to his teeth. Reno hit the floor.
Stay down, Sheriff.
Like hell.
Reno lurched to his feet. Smoke rained punches to his face. Reno teetered for a moment, going back and forth. Jake Reno was down for the count.
We got enough evidence on the good sheriff to lock him up, don't we, Jeff?
I'd say so. It'll be up to the prosecutor if he's tried for anything.
Then get this trash out of here. Put him in his own jail and make sure he stays there.
One of the trackers Smoke Jensen had sent out reported back the next day.
We found sign about 3 miles from the ranch. The Tuckers were taken to the B Bar H, sure enough. The closer they got, the less careful they were about covering their trail. And something else, Mr. Jensen. That place is being turned into a fort. Armed riders everywhere. Fence lines are being raised higher. Windows of the main house are boarded up.
Ray, how many men do you figure are siding with Benton Howell and Sierras?
Ray Hightower evaluated the quality of the gunmen he had seen.
Oh, I'd say 25 to 30 of them are average to good. They stay off the ridge lines, keep the trees where they can. Most don't smoke at night. There's another 20 or so who just don't measure up. Trash with a gun strapped to it. There's more drifting in all the time, 5 to 10 a day.
Those numbers did not appeal to Smoke Jensen. Even a poor shot could hit someone sometime. He simply did not have enough men for a head-on fight.
It sounds like they're getting ready to stand off an army.
Could be that this Englishman is trying to buy time.
For what purpose, Walt?
He did have all those politicians out there for a big party. While you were there, did you gather that they were being paid for favors already done?
More like Benton Howell was courting them. It could be that they haven't come through so far.
Yeah. So he has to stall us until whatever he's doing becomes legal. Which means we should do a little pushing right soon. We have to force this issue before he can get whatever he's after out of the politicians.
How soon?
In a day or two. First, we have to make Sicaro unpopular with the sort Benton Howell is attracting to town.
We best do that before the place fills up again.
Oh, no time like the present.
Soon, the Rangers were busy all over town, tacking up small, neat posters that read, "Everyone not a resident of Sicaro, New Mexico Territory or its environs is hereby ordered to be out of town by noon Tuesday." That was the next day. By late afternoon, some of the least confident among the gunmen began to drift out of town. A few more joined them the next morning. Many hung around, though, to see how this hand would be played. Some soon learned when the Rangers and some local residents who had been deputized began to make sweeps of the streets. Slowly, the crowd of gunfighters began to thin noticeably. But most of them knew who was hiring and how much they would be paid. And many even knew how to get to the B Bar H.
Well, Smoke, we got one less headache, looks like. One of my rangers reported to me that there's some hard cases led by Orrin Banning over at Fannie Mae's parlor house. They say they're coming out shooting. One of them with a big mouth told us that they'd take on all comers.
How many?
I heard there was 7.
Jeff and Walt cut their eyes to Smoke. The legendary gunfighter quirked his lips in a hint of a smile. Then he hitched up his cartridge belt.
I guess we'd better get down to Fannie Mae's.
When Smoke Jensen, Jeff York, and Walt Reardon rounded the corner of the block that held the house of ill repute, 7 men stood stretched across the wide street. The one in the middle took 2 long strides ahead of his henchmen.
Hold it right there. I hear you badge pushers done run some friends of mine out of town. I'm here to tell you that my name's Orrin Banning, and you ain't running me out.
Carry you out, more likely.
Who might you be?
Captain Jeff York, Arizona Rangers.
That didn't seem to faze Banning.
Walt Reardon. No doubt you've heard of me.
Banning did pale somewhat at that.
Yeah? Can't believe you turned law dog. How about you, mister?
Smoke Jensen.
Right then, Orrin Banning did a right peculiar thing, considering he faced three of the best gunfighters on the frontier. He gave his sidemen the signal and went for his gun. Most of them didn't even clear leather before Smoke, Jeff, and Walt fired their first rounds. One of the outlaws went down, a hand clutching his belly. Jeff's round spun a man sideways, but then he turned back to the action with a vengeance. He put a bullet through Walt's left arm. A moment before he died of .44 caliber poisoning from the pistol in the hand of Smoke Jensen. Walt Reardon, ignoring his pain, dropped his six-shooter and hauled a short-barreled L.C. Smith Double 10 from behind his back. The shot column of double-aught buck lifted a short, squat gun slick off his boots and planted him in a water trough. Smoke and Jeff each took one of the remaining hard cases.
Anyone else?
Smoke found no more takers. Two of the gun hawks survived the shootout, one being Orrin Banning himself. Their wounds were dressed, and then they were hauled off to the jail. Ferdy Biggs watched as Smoke, Jeff, and Walt accompanied the two men inside the sheriff's office. Ferdy had been talking with Sheriff Reno.
I need you to lock these two up, Ferdy.
In the cell section, Ferdy cut his eyes to the disgraced sheriff behind bars. Reno nodded once. Ferdy entered the office area.
Lock him up yourself.
Jeff took the keys from Ferdy. Smoke Jensen bent over a seated Walt Reardon to change the makeshift bandage on Walt's arm.
Walt, I still say you need to see a doctor.
I don't need to see no doctor. It's just a scratch.
With Smoke's back turned, Ferdy had all the encouragement he needed. His six-gun cleared leather silently. But before Ferdy Biggs could ear back the hammer, Smoke Jensen turned in an eye blink, his right fist filled with a big .45 Colt. Transfixed by surprise, Ferdy stupidly tried to continue. Ferdy's legs reflexed violently and catapulted him over the former sheriff's desk. His lifeless frame sprawled on the floor behind.
Damn! How'd you know, Smoke?
I saw your eyes narrow.
I just saw him. I was gonna call a warning to you.
That squint did enough to tip me off.
What now?
We drag that garbage out of here and get on with it.
With their assorted wounds properly tended to, Smoke Jensen, Jeff York, and half of the Rangers with tall pockets rode directly toward the B-Bar H. Walt Reardon stayed behind to hold the jail.
We're mighty short on numbers.
I thought about that before we left, so I brought along enough dynamite to lower the odds a little.
Reckon this is the last go-round?
It had damn well better be.
They rode on in silence for a while. By late afternoon, they reached the boundary of Benton Howell's ranch. Smoke noticed it first. The split rail fences had been filled in with rocks and dirt to form parapets. Behind them stood 20 rifle-toting gun hawks, lured by the high money paid and a chance to test themselves against Smoke Jensen. Smoke and his men reined in just out of range.
We aren't going through there, even with dynamite.
Don't go off too sudden, Jeff. What we need to do is look around a little more. We'll ride around the whole spread and see how much is done up like this.
They made it only halfway around the 10 sections controlled by Benton Howe by nightfall. So far, it appeared that only a half section, some 320 acres, had been sealed off. Not all the approaches were covered by so many men. Smoke had led them out of sight of those guarding the road and gate when they had been able to cross over onto the ranch property. Well accustomed to the rigors of manhunting, the Rangers made a cold camp. Smoke sat chewing on a strip of jerky and took counsel from the stars. After a while, he rose to his boots and walked over to where Jeff York had already bedded down for the night. He squatted beside his friend.
I've made up my mind. Come first light, we'll ride back to the Tucker place and send for the rest of Tall Pocket's men. Then, I'm going to fix up something that will get us through all those defenses.
What do you have in mind, Smoke?
The dynamite got me thinking on it. That and the wide gaps along this side that aren't being watched. You'll see what I'm doing when we get to working on it.